Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call is being recorded. I will be standing by if you need any assistance, and it's now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. Guillermo Cantor. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us for this call. I'm Guillermo Cantor, Senior Policy Analyst at the American Immigration Council. Today, the American Immigration Council is releasing a report titled No Action Taken, Lack of CBP Accountability in Responding to Complaints of Abuse. The report, co-authored by Professor Daniel Martinez from George Washington University, my colleague Dr. Walter Ewing from the American Immigration Council, and myself, examines one of the few avenues available for people to report mistreatment by Border Patrol agents, namely the complaint system. We analyzed a spreadsheet summarizing 809 complaints provided to us by CBP Office of Internal Affairs in response to a FOIA litigation. Although the data we obtained does not cover the entire universe of complaints filed with the agency, given that there is no unified system through which the Department of Homeland Security receives all complaints regarding agents' misconduct, it offers a very interesting snapshot of the problems that affect the complaint system and consequently compromise the agency's accountability. The report is available on our website, immigrationpolicy.org. During this call, my colleague Daniel Martinez will discuss some of the main findings of the study. Next, to provide the perspective of border communities within the context of this report, is Vicky Gaubeca, who directs the Regional Center for Border Rights at ACLU New Mexico. Vicky also co-chairs the Southern Border Communities Coalition, which brings together more than 60 organizations from San Diego, California, to Brownsville, Texas, to ensure that border enforcement policies and practices are accountable and fair. Also today, a number of organizations led by the Women's Refugee Commission and the American Civil Rights Union are releasing a set of recommendations to the Department of Homeland Security to improve complaint processing. Following Vicky's presentation, Jennifer Parkle, Senior Program Officer for Migrant Rights and Justice at the Women's Refugee Commission, will talk to us about these recommendations. The recommendations are available online at womensrefugeecommission.org, and you can also find a link at the bottom of our report. Before we start with the presentations, I want to note that this call is being recorded. We'll start with Daniel Martinez, who is going to give us a brief overview of the AIC report. So I'll turn it to Daniel now.
Thanks, Guillermo. As noted, our report covers 809 complaints of alleged mistreatment lodged against U.S. Border Patrol agents between January 22, 2009 and January 5, 2012. Although it's not possible to determine which cases had merit and which ones did not, it's striking that among the cases in which a formal decision was issued, 97% resulted in no action taken. Moreover, among all complaints, there were still 40% were still pending investigation when the complaint data were turned over to the American Immigration Council. Overall, only 13 complaints resulted in formal action taken against an agent. Ultimately, we find that physical abuse was the most often cited reason for the complaint in about 40% of cases, followed by excessive use of force in 38% of cases. Verbal abuse or threats were cited in about 3% of cases, while improper searches or inappropriate touching, which usually involved a strip search, were noted in about 2% of cases. In terms of the characteristics of the individual towards which the complaint was filed against, 97% of cases cite a Border Patrol agent as alleged perpetrator of abuse, while 3% cite a Border Patrol supervisor. In terms of gender of the complaint, the complainant, 23% were female, while 77% were male. Now, although women appear to be overrepresented among complainants when compared to their share of apprehensions, this finding should be interpreted with caution, as the sex of complainant was not reported systematically. Now, on the other hand, we see that juveniles make up about 7.2% of complaints, which is strikingly similar to their share of apprehensions. We also find important differences across Border Patrol sectors. Over 70% of all complaints were filed against agents in the Tucson, Rio Grande Valley, and San Diego sectors. Now, this is obviously a function of more unauthorized migrants crossing through these areas. However, after standardizing complaints to 100,000 apprehensions, we find the highest rates of complaints are in the Del Rio, Rio Grande Valley, and San Diego sectors. On the other hand, if we examine the complaint rates per 1,000 agents, we see the highest rates in the Tucson, Rio Grande Valley, and San Diego sectors. In sum, there are important differences between sectors, with Rio Grande Valley and San Diego sectors having the highest complaint rates in terms of both apprehensions as well as the number of agents. Now with that, I'll just go ahead and for the sake of time, turn it back over to Guillermo.
Thank you so much, Daniel. And once again, I want to remind everyone that the report is available on our website, immigrationpolicy.org. Next, we have Vicky Gaubeca from ACLU New Mexico, who will illustrate the points we discussed so far with some examples from the southwestern border region. So, Vicky, I'll turn it to you. Hello? Vicky, are you there?
I'm here. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Goodness.
Please go ahead.
I apologize for that. Something seems to be malfunctioning on my phone. So as I was saying, this latest report by the American Immigration Council absolutely confirms the experiences of our border families and communities. U.S. Customs and Border Protection is now the largest law enforcement agency in the nation, and yet this massive buildup of border enforcement resources has not been matched with adequate accountability and oversight. As a result, our ACLU affiliates in San Diego, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, as well as border groups and advocates such as those in the Southern Border Communities Coalition, have registered a pattern of civil and human rights abuses at the border on the part of CBP officials. And the abuses have been ranging from racial profiling, excessive force, unwarranted, invasive, and humiliating personal searches at ports of entry and checkpoints, unjustified and repeated detentions based on misidentification at ports of entry, use of coercion to force individuals to surrender their legal rights, citizenship documents, and property. And the complaints we've received have come from both sides of the border and from U.S. citizens, lawful residents, and individuals who are visiting the United States. For example, in May 2012, we filed an administrative complaint with the Department of Homeland Security Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties that documented 11 instances in which CBP agents disregarded the rights of individuals crossing the border in apparent violation of the U.S. Constitution, international law, and agency guidelines. To date, we have received a response in only 3 of these cases, and the responses failed to appropriately address our complaints. The agency also refuses to be transparent about its enforcement practices. Last January, the ACLU filed a FOIA requesting any policies on the operation of Border Patrol checkpoints and roving patrols, including policies for detaining people and searching vehicles, trainings related to dogs who might falsely alert, and data on how often a search resulted in finding anything. The agency completely failed to respond to this request by even sending us a form letter. In April, the ACLU of Arizona filed a suit to get a response. This report also confirms our concerns of CBP's policy and training on use of force and physical abuse. As you may know, since January 2010, at least 27 individuals have died as a result of use of force, 3 of them teenagers who were standing in Mexico when shot and killed. Countless of individuals have complained of physical abuse, including, as the report illustrates, a pregnant woman who was kicked by a Border Patrol agent in the El Paso sector and later miscarried. The El Paso sector, by the way, covers West Texas and all of New Mexico, and it ranks 4th in this report when it's divided by 100,000, when it's standardized to 100,000. We continue to document cases of abuse along the entire border. ACLU's website includes video testimonies of some of these complaints. We simply need a more effective, meaningful complaint system. To summarize, our border communities, our friends and families and neighbors to the south, generally feel that border enforcement agents who commit abuse simply get away with it. This problem is systemic and border-wide. There is no one way to file a complaint. How to file a complaint is unclear. And when we do file a complaint, there's simply no adequate response. Furthermore, no one is holding agents accountable for when they do, in fact, commit an abuse. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Vicky. With that, we're going to turn it to Jennifer Palco, who, as I mentioned earlier, is the Senior Program Officer at the Women's Refugee Commission. And Jennifer's presentation will focus on the recommendations to VHS to improve the complaint processing.
Thank you. So first I would like to congratulate the authors on this wonderful and incredibly important report. As was mentioned, the Women's Refugee Commission is a research and advocacy organization. So in the course of our research and speaking with hundreds of mostly migrant women and children, we regularly encounter migrants who tell us stories of suffering abuse at the hands of CBP officials. And through our conversations with migrants, we've learned firsthand that CBP's abuse complaint system is much needed and vitally important, but it is woefully inadequate and unresponsive. Just by way of another example, in 2012, the Women's Refugee Commission filed 4 complaints on behalf of unaccompanied children who had wanted to report abuse by CBP agents against them. The children had no idea how to file the complaints themselves, so we agreed to do it on their behalf. The system was incredibly complicated even for us to navigate, and to this date we have never received any response from the agency about our complaints. It is clear to us that the only way to end these abuses is to ensure that CBP has adequate oversight and accountability mechanisms. Having a functioning complaint system is an integral part of this. So along with ACLU and several other advocacy organizations, the Women's Refugee Commission has created a document that outlines changes that the Department of Homeland Security can make to its current system to ensure CBP officials will be held accountable for their actions and ensure that there is transparency and respect for human rights and due process in accordance with basic American values. I will briefly outline some of the recommendations in this document. So as you've heard, under the current system, DHS routinely fails to respond, investigate, or provide appropriate redress to complaints. It directs individuals to file complaints through many different venues. This results in departmental inefficiency and confusion about where and how to file complaints. DHS should develop one streamlined complaint system to allow anyone to file any immigration or border-related complaint. There should be ways in which a person can file a complaint online or through a toll-free hotline. Now, having a phone option is particularly important to those who are held in immigration detention because they do not have access to the internet. There should be a mechanism, both through the web and telephonic-based, that provides individuals with timely information in multiple languages regarding the status of their complaint, including which entity within DHS is processing the complaint and if there was any corrective measure taken as a result of the complaint. Finally, there must be a way for DHS to use the information they gather in these complaints to identify national trends and areas of systematic abuse so the agency can modify its training and supervision of officials accordingly. It should also use this information to inform agency policy and its budget. With these steps, CBP can make tremendous progress toward protecting the rights of all migrants, and I'll be happy to answer any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. And now I will open the floor for questions and answers. But before that, I'd like to mention that during the Q&A segment, we will also be joined by my colleague, Melissa Crowe, who is the director of the American Immigration Council's Legal Action Center. She will be able to provide some additional background on the FOIA request.
Great, thank you. And as a reminder, to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star and one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to be removed from the queue, simply press the pound key. Again, to ask a question, please press star one now. We'll take our first question from Chris Sherman with Associated Press. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. I actually just had two things. One, I wondered in the 13 cases where you saw some action taken, if you were able to break those down any further in terms of the type of complaint that was originally filed, excessive force or other abuse. Do you have any sense of those cases where action was actually taken?
I'd like to ask Daniel if he can answer that question.
You know, that's a really good question. Unfortunately, we were really limited in the detailed nature of each complaint in terms of the data that were provided to us by CBP. Just by looking at the allegation summary provided, these 13 cases in which a formal complaint was arrived upon, which was not no action taken, they don't really seem to be all that different qualitatively from other allegations. So again, we don't know. Maybe it might be something that it might be a very egregious case. It might be that the individual agent had already had a history of misconduct within the within Border Patrol. And unfortunately, we just don't really have a lot of detailed information. But just looking at the allegation summary and comparing those 13 cases in which some formal action was taken that wasn't no action, they don't appear to be all that qualitatively different.
Okay, thank you. And just my second question is, having seen now this subset of complaints, do you all have any plans to try to get a hold of the broader universe, I guess, including the ones that were routed to CRCL?
Let me say something first, and then I'd like to ask Melissa if she has any ideas. But I think that, yeah, once we learn, like, the whole complaint system is so obscure and so, like, non-transparent that we learn a lot about how the complaint system operates throughout this research itself. So, yes, once we learn that by just focusing on this, as you said, this subset of complaints, we're leaving out part of the whole universe of complaints that are being filed with DHS about CBP agents' misconduct. I think it would be a good follow-up step to try to obtain more data on the other complaints that are filed with other agencies. But I'd like to talk to see if Melissa has anything to add.
Sure. I think I would note first that we're aware of a number of other individuals and organizations who are involved in this process, so it's definitely a joint effort, and there are some pending FOIA requests that are broader than the one that we filed that resulted in this information. The only complaints that we have been able to get so far are those that have been resolved. Generally, if a complaint is under investigation, the agency digs in its heels before, agreeing to negotiate about what can and can't be released. So it's definitely something that we're thinking about, but I suspect that what we get back will be very limited.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Yeah, if I could just add, I also want to note that this is, although we're seeing just this very small subsample of 809 complaints, And one thing that CBP has said is, listen, you know, we've come into over that study time period, we came into contact with over 900,000 individuals, or I guess 900,000 apprehensions. So this is a pretty good track record. However, I want people to keep in mind that number of studies, multiple studies, have demonstrated an approximate 10% abuse rate among randomly sampled, recently repatriated migrants. So to be honest with you, I mean, we're talking about possibly, 90,000, anywhere from 75,000 to 90,000 cases of abuse, and here we only have 809 complaints, which is just a very small fraction of the population universe that we're talking about. So, again, this stems back to, a complaint is a function of multiple factors, including the inability to report because somebody is deported or in fear due to their legal status or whatnot. So I think that's another thing to keep in mind is, although these are only 809 complaints, it's just really scratching the surface of the true population universe.
Thank you, Dan. That's very, very interesting. Any other questions?
Thank you. Next, we'll move to Bob Ortega with the Arizona Republic. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks. Yeah, I had two questions. The first is for Jennifer. You were talking about the four complaints that you filed for children. Could you go through that? This was, you said, in, was that 2012 you did that, or was that last year? Can you just review that briefly?
Sure.
A little bit more detail on what was involved?
Sure. We were conducting research on unaccompanied children who were apprehended at the U.S.-Mexico border. And so we were interviewing kids. It was children who were in custody, in the federal government custody, so they were in facilities run by the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And so of the 161 children that we spoke with, four of them felt very strongly that they wanted their complaints to be reported. We spoke to many other children who had been abused but didn't want to file reports. So we filed on behalf of those four children and have had follow-up meetings with the government about our complaints, but to this date have still not gotten any response on the complaints.
And I'm sorry, just to review again, when the time frame for this was when?
This was in the summer of 2012.
Okay, and so you filed complaints that same summer?
Yes, that same summer.
Okay. And then the other question I had, I guess, would be for maybe Daniel Martinez, I don't know, or whoever wants to address this. In your efforts to get this information, can you talk a little bit about, it sounds like you got summaries, and I assume that you must have, at least appealed some of the denials. You were saying that they, for example, dug in their heels when you were asking about cases that have not yet been resolved. Can you elaborate a little bit on the types of, what kinds of exemptions did they claim? Did you find or did you believe that a lot of the refusal to turn over documents based on valid exemptions or specious?
That's a really good question. Either Guillermo or Melissa, could you?
Sure. I should clarify that this spreadsheet was produced in response to a more specific FOIA request about CBP's use of coercive tactics to encourage people to take voluntary return. We had specifically asked for complaints filed about misconduct that was committed in the course of informing someone and asking them about the option of voluntary return and asking them whether they were prepared to take it. And they told us that they didn't classify their complaints in a way that would enable them to extract those particular ones. So they gave us this whole spreadsheet of the universe of complaints that were then pending with the Office of Internal Affairs at CBP. When I spoke before, I was speaking generally about my experience trying to get complaints from different components of the agency. I don't know whether the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties maintains spreadsheets like the one that we have, but we did not specifically ask for the complaints that gave rise to the spreadsheet because it wasn't part of our initial request.
Thank you, Melissa. Any other questions?
Yes, next we'll move to Perla Treviso with the Arizona Daily Star. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yes, hi, how are you doing? I have a question regarding more to the Tucson sector. There were two difference between when you took into account the number of Border Patrol agents and then when you took into account apprehensions. What does that tell you? Because on the one hand, the Tucson sector was pretty high, and on the other, it came much lower than the Rio Grande or San Diego.
That's a question for Dan.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. It might suggest that in proportion to the number of apprehensions in the Tucson sector, agent staffing levels tend to be somewhat lower given their share. I mean, we see perhaps more even distribution in the number of agents across sectors when compared to shares of apprehensions during this time period. So it's just a different way of looking at the data. So ultimately, I think what we really need to do is we need to take both apprehensions as well as agents into consideration, and that's why we see the Del Rio sector as well as San Diego sector is really having these higher both complaint rates, both in terms of apprehension as well as in terms of agents. And then, as you mentioned, the Tucson sector, when you just look at the number of agents, tends to be a little bit higher. So that's somewhat a function of differences in distribution in terms of number of agents across each sector in relation to a number of apprehensions. So again, it's these are what the data say, and really I think we would have to focus, maybe refine our research questions somewhat to get at what this ultimately means.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And just as a reminder, that's star and one to ask your question. In the meantime, we'll move to Pilar Morero with La Opinion. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yes, thank you, La Opinion. I was going through the list of some of the specific complaints that you have in the report, and I think one of you mentioned the woman that was kicked and alleges that caused her miscarriage. Do you have personal knowledge of any of these cases, and are these cases some of the ones that you complained about, or... do you have any more specifics, for example, about that woman, that case in particular?
Well, this is Guillermo. Through the information we got through the FOIA litigation, we didn't get any details there, obviously, because they're protecting people's identities and there is confidentiality. There are confidentiality issues involved. So the answer would be no there. I don't know if anyone has anything to add about like specific cases.
Yeah, this is Vicky. This is Pilar. I don't have specific information about that particular case. However, we have registered several similar cases. In our May 2012 complaint, we actually, the complaint was about a woman who experienced a sexual assault at a checkpoint in Truth or Consequences. And then when we brought her back to file a case against Border Patrol, she was subjected to a pat down. She and her family members were subjected to a pretty intense pat down, which then prompted her to drop the case. She was pretty much intimidated into dropping the case. Also, our ACLU affiliate in Lower Rio Grande Valley also had a similar case where a woman experienced a miscarriage after being mistreated by Border Patrol agents. And so just along the entire border, we have had similar cases. And I think really the point, I think, of the investigation is really that there is no real clear way to file a complaint. The agency is not transparent about what it does. And furthermore, we hear nothing about how these agents may or may not be held accountable for what on the surface looks like a violation, constitutional violation, or a violation of international laws.
Can that complaint you filed be found somewhere?
The May 2012 one?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's actually on our ACLU website. Yeah, it's May. If you just search May 2012 complaints at ports of entry, CBP, it should come up.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. So do we have any other questions?
Yes, we do. And once again, as a reminder, that is star and one to ask your question. Next, we'll move to a follow-up from Perla Treviso with the Arizona Daily Star. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I forgot to ask, so what type of cases do you think you're missing that went to other routes that you did not get this route, that you did not get through internal affairs? What type of cases normally go through the other process?
This is Vicky, and typically what happens from what we understand, what happens in the internal process of the agency is that there's a joint intake center, and depending on the nature of the complaint, it might go to the Office of Civil Liberties and Civil Rights, or Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties, or it can go to the Office of Professional Responsibility, or I think the first dibs is the Office of the Inspector General. So they do have sort of an internal process, or you can actually file the complaint directly to the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties or to the different parts of the agency. But, you know, from a perspective of border residents, I mean, for example, when you're crossing a port of entry, there is nowhere, you don't see a sign anywhere that says, if you've experienced some kind of abuse, file a complaint here. You don't see in any interaction or as you drive through a checkpoint, you don't see any information anywhere of where you might file a complaint. And so I think that speaks to, you know, not being very clear about how you can provide a complaint when you've experienced some kind of abuse. And I think that's fundamentally our biggest concern.
So like civil rights cases would not be included in the 809?
Actually, this is Melissa. That's not entirely true because as you saw from the report or the summary, there are many cases here, as Dan said, of physical abuse and excessive force and the like. Our understanding is that in many cases, the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties works together with other components of DHS to address complaints where they have overlapping jurisdiction. But we presume that there are other types of civil rights cases that are pending before the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties that are not included in these 809.
Thank you.
And this is Jennifer. The one last thing I would add is a lot of people also file complaints directly to the local office, to the local CBP sector office. So, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who said, well, I wrote a handwritten letter and I mailed it to that local sector. When we talk to the people in CBP headquarters in Washington, D.C., they say they don't access, they never see those local complaints, and they don't account for those when they're considering national trends or regional problems. So those are totally excluded from these systems, the federal systems that everyone's been talking about.
Thanks for the clarification, Jennifer.
Thank you. Next, we'll move to Ted Robbins with NPR. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Just a little clarification. The report specifically talks about the Border Patrol only, but you've mentioned a couple of times, you've mentioned ports of entry. So are these complaints solely Border Patrol, or do they also include field operations or customs agents, which would be at ports of entry?
Daniel, do you want to take that question?
You know, that's an excellent question, and that raised some confusion among the researchers on this particular report. So what we see here in the data in the spreadsheet, again, that the allegations were against specifically either, we only saw two categories, either Border Patrol agents or Border Patrol supervisors. There's no mention of CBP agents, so it's somewhat confusing there. Again, this is a function of the data that were provided directly to us. So based on what they gave us, they only mentioned either Border Patrol agents or Border Patrol supervisors.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, and we do have a follow-up from Bob Ortega with the Arizona Republic. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks. Yeah. Hi. One other question. You were mentioning in the study that you have some complaints that have been pending for a long time where there doesn't seem to have been any action. Pending investigations. And I think the average amount of time you mentioned in the study is like 389 days, yeah. And I was just curious, what's the longest complaint, longest period of time of any of the complaints you have that had not had any action by the time
this is Dan Martinez. We have one from one of the earliest dates I'm looking at right here was 960 days from the time that the complaint was filed early in January of 2009 up to the present, no decision.
And when you say the present,
the present to the day that the data were provided to
the
Immigration Council, January 22nd. I'm sorry. It's through the end date in these data is January 5th of 2012. So up to that date, it had not been that particular case had not been resolved. And so we do see, and just to kind of clarify, that mean number of days might be right-hand censored because there are some cases for let's say at the end, at the very beginning or end of, let's say October 2011 or something like that at the beginning of fiscal year 2012. If we were to exclude those cases from fiscal year 2012, the mean number of days would actually be higher. So it's somewhat, because these data are right-hand censored, it brings that average down a little bit. But
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you mean by right-hand censored. I don't understand.
Yeah, sorry. So it just means that essentially that we got, like, for instance, if a case was filed at the very end of the study time period, let's say in January of 2012, and it was still pending investigation, that would essentially bring the mean down. So
right,
if we were to exclude...
It would be one day, yeah.
It'd be one day or no days or 5 days or something like that. So if we were to exclude all those cases from 2012, it would actually bring the mean for pending up quite a bit.
Right. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes, we do have another question. That comes from Aaron Martinez with El Paso Times. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
I was just wondering, have you guys presented your findings to the CBP, and what has been the response that you have?
This is Dan Martinez. This is an excellent question. In fact, I got the chance to meet with at CBP headquarters here in Washington, D.C. last year when we came out with another report on physical and verbal abuse. and they actually cited these 809 questions. And this was, you know, a year ago. They cited these 809 complaints. And again, they just said, well, listen, this is a pretty good track record. We came into contact with nearly a million people for over this time period, and we only have 809 complaints, and they pat themselves on the back. The reality is these complaints are a function of the opportunity to be able to complain, to file that complaint, which is, again, related to a whole host of other factors. So they're just essentially, in my opinion, or my and I believe the, you know, there's an article that came out this morning in the Times that mentions CBP's official stance, and they said, again, they reiterated that that there were nearly a million apprehensions during this time period and that 809 complaints isn't so bad. However, again, given the complexities and as well as the lack of clarity in terms of how to formally file a complaint, you know, again, this is somewhat problematic. I expect the universe of complaints to actually be much higher than these 809.
Did they address your concerns when it comes to not having an adequate system to report complaint?
That's a really good question. Guillermo, do you want to take that?
Yeah, you mentioned if they address the concern we raised in this report. I couldn't hear the last bit.
Yeah, did they address your concerns about there not being an adequate way to report complaints?
Well, no. We haven't really raised these issues to them yet, and I think that there are some like meetings planned in the near future. But I don't know if Jennifer or Melissa want to talk about that.
Yes, as Jennifer mentioned, I'm sorry to jump in real quick. This is Dan. As Jennifer mentioned, and this was in my experience meeting with folks at CBP headquarters last summer, they talked about having an online process, but the reality is people who are in custody don't have access to the Internet, so that doesn't really make sense to me. And once they get repatriated, it might not necessarily be their most pressing concern to file a complaint.
And this is Vicki. I mean, I just wanted to add that even for people who are on this side of the border who have encountered issues with Border Patrol or Office of Field Operations officials, it is extraordinary. It's not apparent how you can file a complaint. You know, I think most people, when they experience an abuse at a checkpoint, they just, you know, they're disgruntled and angry, but they drive off, you know. And I'm sure that many of the reporters on this call live in the border region. I encourage you that next time you go through a checkpoint or through a port of entry, just look and see if there's any kind of complaint system or a poster anywhere, or even on those fancy TVs they've put at the ports of entry, whether there's any place that is an indication of where you can file a complaint. So I think these complaints are being underreported, number one, and then when they finally are reported, there's no adequate response.
This is Jennifer, and to follow up on Vicki, I mean, I was at a Border Patrol facility not that long ago in December, and they had a poster on the wall that said, if you want to complain, here's the phone number for the INS. And so, you know, the INS was dismantled after the 9/11 terrorist attack. So, you know, that shows how it seems very disingenuous, their communication to people about how they can make complaints. And then, you know, as to the question about the government's response, they've agreed to have a meeting with advocates next month on this issue. You know, this is something that people have been talking to them about for years. So, you know, hopefully there'll be movement in the future, but as to date, there haven't been any major changes to any of their policies yet.
And I just want to add another thing, too. This is, again, Vicki. The Office of the Inspector General, when it evaluated the use of force policies and the Border Patrol and Customs and Border Protection, one of the recommendations was that there is no tracking of these use of force incidents. And similarly, there's no real good tracking of complaints that come in either, which then doesn't inform training or accountability of agents and officials.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Thank you. We'll move to Pilar Marrero with Law Opinion. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, one more thing. So if we think about an agency investigating itself, it's very unlikely to come up with anything. Who else, if you go up the ladder, who should be looking at this? I mean, should it be the White House, the Congress? Who can make DHS or CBP accountable to change this situation?
I think this is Jeremiah. I think that's a very good question, and that's something that is partially addressed in the recommendations that are being released today. So I'll ask Jennifer if she can talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I think it's important for, you know, the highest part of the executive branch, the White House, to be taking this seriously and be very concerned about this. A lot of the recommendations, you know, we struggled with making recommendations that were just for CBP or should they be DHS-wide. And really, this whole concept of one DHS, you know, DHS is composed of Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement. You know, there's all these different agencies within the department, and the department really needs to bring them all together. And so DHS is the one that needs to be making changes. I mean, CBP has its own internal problems, and there are things that CBP can be doing on their own, but DHS really needs to bring CBP in line with everything, and they really need to streamline all their procedures. So it doesn't make sense for them to be having a totally separate process for complaints against ICE than there are for CBP. All immigration and border-related complaints should be streamlined through one process. It's going to be easier for the agency, and, you know, be more resource efficient to have it through the department as opposed to each agency having their own systems.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Is there any other question?
Yes. Next we'll move to Lauren Villagran with the Albuquerque Journal. Please go ahead.
Hi. Actually, I believe my question was just answered. I was interested in, it looked like the recommendations were largely to DHS, although many of the complaints are for Border Patrol, which is under the umbrella of CBP, which is under the umbrella of DHS, but it sounds like the recommendations are for a streamlined process at the highest level rather than siloed. If you'd like to address that again, but I just heard the latest comment.
I didn't have anything else to add unless there's a specific question about what I said.
No, I think it was covered. It's okay.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Thank you both. Do we have any other question?
We do have one last question in queue that does come from Aaron Wolf. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, all. At least the examples listed in the report, was there any indication of or differentiation between who these individuals are, be it a undocumented person or a U.S. citizen?
Yeah, this is Dan Martinez. That's an excellent question. Unfortunately, we don't have disaggregated data that speaks to whether or not the person was, let's say, an unauthorized migrant, a legal mm-hmm. permanent resident, or a U.S. citizen. Some of that can be implied or inferred from the allegation summary. However, you know, we're operating under the assumption that this includes, you know, legal permanent residents as well
sure.
as U.S. citizens as well as unauthorized migrants. However, I would, just looking at the allegation summaries, I would say overwhelmingly, because it does say, for instance, UDA, you know, undocumented alien mm-hmm. in some of the allegation summaries. So it does seem like it's maybe weighted a little bit more towards unauthorized migrants. However, it does include people who are, for instance, I believe there's an African-American man who said that he was racially profiled
mm-hmm.
and formally, you know, filed a complaint.
And would you expect, given the expansion of scope of this report, to include CBP officers, so at the ports of entry, which the gentleman from NPR was talking about, that
yeah,
you would see?
Ideally, that would be ideal. Again,
yeah.
I think with this report, we're just barely starting to scratch the surface. And if you know, if anything, this gave us a better understanding of how complex this complaint process is, and the lack of standardization, as well as the lack of not only transparency but accountability. So I think definitely, you know, that's something that we would like to follow up on.
Oh, yeah. And the part of that question was, though, I mean, do you think you would see a proportional increase to the complaints filed by U.S. citizens if it were expanded to ports of entry at the ports, because U.S. citizens have, comparatively to their interaction with Border Patrol, at least in El Paso, are more likely to have an issue with an officer at a port of entry instead of in between the ports of entry?
I would expect that to be the case. However, that's pure speculation, just given the data limitations. You know,
okay.
Yeah.
This is Melissa. I would just add that our understanding is that there is yet another complaint process that applies to people who are filing complaints about encounters at ports of entry.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Thank you. And do we have any other questions?
At this time, we have no further questions.
Okay, so if there are no more questions, we'll end this call here. Once again, our report is available on our website, immigrationpolicy.org, and you can find a link to the recommendations on that website as well. And for further information or additional questions, please contact Wendy Feliz at 202-507-7524. Thank you all for joining us on this call, and have a good day. Bye-bye.